You just made the list. Coming up in about an hour, we'll have a pair of tickets to see the Black Keys at Bridgestone Arena. That's October 1st, just around the corner. Keep that in mind. Pick six. That's coming up at 1 o'clock. Your chance to get in there. Remember, you get in via the telephone. You get locked into our contest by calling in. You get two top shelf picks. You can also pick online at thegamenashville.com, of course, but you only get one top shelf. So a little bit of an advantage this year by calling in, and we've had a great response from the caller. So be looking forward to that coming up at 1 o'clock. Hey, Preds fans, don't forget, Sunday night, second annual Preds Fest, Sunday afternoon, I should say, from 2 until 6 p.m. at Bridgestone Arena. It's free. That should get your attention. Predators players will be there. Live entertainment, a used equipment sale. Fun for the whole family. Plus, ESPN The Game Nashville will be there with a tent. You can win some great prizes and some game gear. So be looking for that. Bigger and better than even last year, which was big. The annual one, first annual. And now it's the second year, and it's just going to keep getting bigger and better. Second annual Preds Fest, Sunday afternoon from 2 to 6 over at Bridgestone Arena. Getting everybody ready for that home opener slash regular season opener next Thursday, October 3rd, against the Minnesota Wild. So let's talk about that. We're going to check in with Chris Sanders in about 10, 15 minutes. We'll also get Chris Domino down in Atlanta. So we'll get a little Titans and Falcons perspective again coming up here soon. But let's talk about the division because, as I said, the Preds will kick off their season against the division. When you look around the division as we sit here today, you see what?
I think we all know what the outlook is in the Central, and it's going to be pretty brutal. I think one part of the answer is in the Pacific. Does anybody make a run at one of the wild cards? Because the last few years we've grown used to the Central getting both of the wild cards. You're not guaranteed for the top five to make the playoffs. So that's one question to ask is, in the Pacific, does anybody make a run at a wild card like an Arizona? Does Edmonton get their act together with Connor McDavid and a new coach, Dave Tippett? Does Vancouver speed up their process of rebuilding with some of the young players? I don't know. It's maybe not overly likely, but it's not out of the realm. Arizona, to me, is the sleeper. But as far as the Central, as we've said for a long time, you could be really good and finish fourth or fifth. The Predators were wild card number two in 2017 and made the Stanley Cup final. So whether you finish first or fifth is really not that significant. It's about making it. But it's so balanced this year where you look at Nashville, St. Louis, Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg. One through five with those teams, I'm not sure I would be overly shocked. You put them in any order in those five?
Really?
I don't think I would be that surprised.
You would not be shocked if I told you the Blackhawks won the division.
No, I didn't say the Blackhawks and the Wild. Those are the two teams that would be, I think, somewhat surprising to be in the top five. Especially win the division, that would be a surprise. Okay, so let's put them in a outside looking in, got to prove it. Now, would it surprise me if Chicago challenges for a playoff spot? I don't think I would be that surprised.
Well, you shouldn't be. They did it last year.
They hung around for a while, right? They hung in there. They were always fighting uphill, right? They were in a big hole.
They finished 6 points out of the final playoff spot, but still, yeah. Toward the end, they were still battling for a playoff spot.
Fair point. As bad as they were, and they were bad for a point. I think maybe you say to yourself, are they as bad as they were last year? Probably not.
With a
better backup goalie, you know, more issues there. They've got issues in different places on defense especially. But they're going to score, right? The Wild aren't an awful team.
Will Taze have the same type of year, though?
I mean, he's Jonathan Toews. He's a Hall of Famer.
I understand, but a lot of people thought it was starting the numbers at least, right? Stats was starting to tail off, right?
And yeah.
But then he has this big...
He had a great year last year.
Boom, another big year. So can he do it back-to-back? A year older?
See, he's one of those guys that he doesn't have to score as many points to be a great player. He just does everything. And last year, Chicago got to a point where they were scoring four goals a night, but they were losing 6-4.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So he had a lot of goals and assists, but that wasn't helping them win. So Chicago's an interesting team that way. But I was just listening to an interview in Winnipeg. Paul Maurice is basically saying, you know what? I'm acting in my mind as if Dustin Byfuglien, Kyle Connor, and Patrick Laine are on, quote, long-term injury. Because how else can I look at it? I can't know when they're coming back. I have to soldier on with my guys until I get them back. So I think right now, I think what you're going to see when people in the next week, and you're going to start seeing them a lot, the predictions, you know, post-training camp predictions,
mm-hmm.
you're going to see Winnipeg in the five hole a lot. But they could get those three guys back next week,
they
right?
Could.
We don't know.
Sure.
They could show up tomorrow. They could show up tomorrow. They could show up today and say, we've signed both of these guys, and Byfuglien says, you know what, I'm coming back.
Seems highly unlikely, but that
seems
could happen.
Seems unlikely, but I do think they will get all three back at some point. The question is, can they tread water until they get those three guys back?
I think for now, I'm going to ask the question, because I always try to figure out, like, who do you, you know, in the Melvin Gordon thing, I'm like, what is your end game, man? I don't understand what you and your camp are doing. So I put it more on Melvin Gordon. Ezekiel Elliott, I got it. He was holding more cards.
Yeah.
And so you look at the Cowboys and you say, okay, what are you going to do about this? The ball, to me, is in your court. Antonio Brown, you know, we goes without saying. But in this one, I'm not looking at Laine. I'm looking at the Jets. What is your goal? What is your plan? What are you doing, Winnipeg? That's the way I look at it. Like, I understand what Laine's trying to do. Is he worth what he's asking or what he wants? I would have to say Patrick Laine fits into the, when we had the discussion about Andy Dalton, about Joe Flacco at the time, and what we've had already started to have about Mariota, right? Okay, fine, but then what are you going to do? What's better? What are you going to do to replace it? How do you replace that? So what are you going to do better? And I would say it's even a little bit more unique perspective just because we've been up there. What hockey means to that city, because let's just be honest, we've talked about it, we've joked about it. People are great, they're super nice. There's not much going on in Winnipeg, and it's cold. And when it's hockey season, that's all they have up there. Yeah, I know they got the Blue Bombers and all that good stuff.
But that's part of the lure of the fabric
of that city.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you have superstars in that city, I mean, they run the Patrick Laine is a big deal up there.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose him, and you've already lost players. I mean, they've lost players. Now they still have Wheeler. I get it. They still have really good players, but how does that affect that market?
I think that's
a big loss for a market like Winnipeg.
It's a big loss. I think they've come to know that they're kind of the underdog, that they're not a destination city, and they kind of use that as motivation. They wear the chip on the – I think their following will be fine. I think their issues are well documented. Now, take the other three teams. Take the Predators out of it. Blues, Avalanche, Stars. Who do you like out of those three? Is it obvious that it's the Blues because they won it, or do you think in the year after?
It's not obvious. Not to me.
Same thing. I think you can ask questions about all three teams, right? Because Colorado looked great in the playoffs, but they barely got into the playoffs. They're young. Is everything going to be – are they going
well,
to explode to the
Brandon?
Next level? Well, they got to sign him. It hadn't happened yet.
They got to pay him. Now, there's stuff out there that seems like they're prepared. They haven't signed anything.
Hadn't happened.
But it at least for now, it kind of feels like the Roman Josi situation. I don't think it's in dire straits. It doesn't feel like it's going anywhere, right? Like, it's all going to get taken care of. It just hasn't. Is that fair to say? Like nobody's here. We're not getting calls every day or people reaching out to us on Twitter. Like, what's the deal? What every day? That's another day. What? Why is Roman Yossi? Yep. Like nobody's doing. I don't.
Well,
I don't
Roman
get the
Yossi's
feeling
here.
I understand.
Mikko Rantanen can't even come to camp. He hasn't been there at all because they haven't signed him.
I understand, but it doesn't still feel like there's a panic situation. Like they're not going to get this done before the start of the season. Do you feel that way, or do you disagree?
But they got to play. I mean, they got a game coming up.
True.
Wednesday or Thursday, whenever they start.
You'd have to believe they're going to get this done. The Lion A feels like a much further. They feel like they're much further apart than maybe the Rantanen situation in Colorado. I would say right now, today, I trust Dallas the most.
Do you?
You're taking Nashville out. You're talking about those three,
right?
I'm
taking Nashville out.
I would trust Dallas the most.
You like Dallas?
Yeah.
You're a believer.
Well. Yes, I would say because, one, they brought in, so we'll see how it all plays out with new bodies. But those young guys,
Pavelski
that really,
is an interesting
it is,
guy.
It is interesting, right?
By the end of the contract, I don't know, but this year.
But I'm talking about this year.
Yeah,
I'm not talking
He should give them
like
some
I
stuff.
Would think, because you know, I was a big fan of that, and I was like, I don't like it, but, man, I think there's a chance he's really motivated to show everybody, hey, this is a mistake. And so... And then you've got all those young guys that shine that you're like, okay, they're probably just gonna get better. Like that's scary.
But it's not a given. That's the thing. Like you can look great in the playoffs, and let's take our man Roope Hintz, who we got very familiar with. He gave them a huge lift in the playoffs. I mean, I still have nightmares. Because it's like, Roope Hintz, you know, hopefully we handle it. Nope, didn't handle him. He was a huge factor.
He was
now does
tremendous.
He Can he do it every night? It's a little bit like Dante Fabro, right? Small sample size. He was great.
Mm-hmm.
Now can he do it over a six-month journey? Can he go through the ups and downs, the grind, and be productive? I think the Stars have some players that fit that category.
Yep.
But they look good. Like, they're rock solid in the playoffs, whereas last year I don't think you could say that going into the season.
No. The Blues, I worry about the Stanley Cup hangover.
You think so?
I do. And we don't truly know. The big elephant in the room is Bennington just pick up right where he left off, or
that's another guy.
What's year two for Bennington look like? And so those are legit question marks, but the Blues could absolutely come out and still be, obviously they just traded for Justin Falk, and they could be the cream of the crop. I don't know. I need to see it to believe it. And then, of course, Colorado, I think, is right there too, but obviously they've got this Rantanen situation that they need to take care of. If they get him signed and everything's done, you know the Avalanche will probably be right there in the thick of everything.
They also now are making they traded Tyson Barrie, right, who has been one of the guys we've gotten used to watch a lot. So their defense, I'm really curious, with Sammy Girard taking a bigger role. Now this Cale Makar, who lit the world on fire jumping into the playoffs, what do they look like in bigger roles over the course of the whole season? It's Grubauer, same thing. Got hot late.
Mm-hmm.
What about the whole season?
Yep. We'll come back. Forever Titan Chris Sanders next. We've talked a lot about the Titans and Falcons Sunday at noon. Our pregame coverage on this station starts at 7 a.m. 4.5 hours of pregame coverage. 9:30 to 11:30 is where we switch gears to the show downtown, George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue, where Jared and Floyd Reese and Forever Titan Chris Sanders will be.
What's up, man?
And, oh, wait a minute. There he is.
Hey Butch. How you doing?
That's Chris Sanders. I've had voicemail messages that sound like that. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
What's going on? Hey.
Hey, Butch. How you doing?
Hey, did you see that game? Did you see that SMU game?
Hey, Darren, I got to ask you a question before we start, man. We do Silly Dog Underpicks on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Would you tell the listeners how many wins you have? I want the listeners to understand what we're dealing
because,
with.
Yeah, Chris, I think you're right. Sometimes people only listen on Thursday. They may not listen to
so
Friday.
So you want to recap
they might have missed yesterday.
Uh-huh. Who's in second right now? I just want to know. I don't have no idea.
Well,
who's in second?
I'm sure people listening have figured out that if you're asking that question, you've had success. I have not.
But at least win one game. I mean, you haven't won any.
That is the objective. Yes, I'm trying. I just want you to know I am trying.
As long as you give it your all, that's all that matters.
In all seriousness, you have been a great addition to the contest every Thursday. It's been a lot of fun, and you have certainly carried your own.
Well, I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, you guys, Derek and Kelly Hoekman, those guys, you guys just make it really, really fun. But in the back of my mind, I'm trying to win.
He's in second place right
yes.
now.
Yes.
Second place. This is going to be the biggest win right there with USC beating Washington, and that's going to take me over the top.
Well,
that is the
for
the,
people
that is,
don't realize, yeah. Chris is from Colorado. He's from Denver. So he got on the board with Colorado, the Buffs.
Yes.
And his son, CJ, is at SMU. Down in Dallas, SMU, which I've seen that campus. Nice campus.
And nice campus. Yes, sir.
He picked SMU to beat TCU, and so he's going to some of his sweet spots, and he's getting results.
Hey, don't forget the girlfriend now. Throw that in there.
You're right. You're right. And you have not even tried to keep her secret. You've just come out and said, hey, the girlfriend is helping out big time.
Hey, we're watching TV on Saturday, and I want to watch Judge Judy, and we're watching the game, and I accidentally flipped the channel. She's like, what are you doing? And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. So I'll turn it back. That's what I'm dealing with.
And you told me yesterday off the air that she actually charts everybody's picks and is keeping up with the panel's selections.
Every single weekend, she's there. Hey, guess what? Look at what's happening. She's turning to ESPN and looking on her phone. I'm like, what in Sam E. Hill is going on? She's more competitive than I am.
How has George Jones on downtown on 2nd Avenue, how's that been thus
man,
far during the pregame?
Really good. Oh, man, it's been outstanding, especially working with Floyd and Jared. And then also, man, the crowd that comes in there and just the view there, everything is really, really special. I'm glad the venue is there, man. It's kind of a family atmosphere. And, you know, a lot of people come in. You can listen to a live band. I haven't listened to it yet, but I heard you can listen to a live band. But it's just a special, special place to be.
Very cool. Okay, through your eyes, what have you seen through three games of the Tennessee Titans?
Just inconsistency. You know, everybody knows it. Everybody knows that it's the offensive line. The offensive line is struggling. And I'm going to tell you where it went downhill a little bit. I don't want to be, you know, Debbie Downer, but you just got to call it what it is when they played the Pittsburgh Steelers. When you struggle like that on the offensive line, teams are going to take advantage of what they saw on film. Because if you look at when they played Pittsburgh in the preseason, and then the last two games, the teams are doing exactly what Pittsburgh did, is they're pressuring the A-gap between the center and the guard, and that's where the trouble's coming. I just think it's a lot of been inconsistency.
Through your wide receiver eyes, when you see Julio Jones, and you
see
Calvin Ridley, and you see Mohamed Sanu, and by the way, Austin Hooper, the tight end on offense – there's a lot of weapons for Matt Ryan.
Man, it is. I mean, but the secondary is going to have to really be on their P's and Q's. Logan, Butler, Byard. You know, Byard said at the beginning of the season that this can be the best secondary in the league. You have to show it on Sunday because you got some dogs in Atlanta. I mean, look at Julio Jones. When he catches the ball, he gets a 5-yard hitch, a 7-yard hitch, even like a 5-yard in. He has a mentality he's going to take it the whole distance, and that's what you're dealing with. Then you got Ridley, who's a smaller guy and maybe not as explosive as Julio, but that joker can flat out get open. So you got some weapons. And then on top of that, don't forget about Freeman. Freeman's a running back. He's a pretty good running back. He runs really mean, and he runs physical. So I think the Tennessee Titans defense is going to have a task at hand.
So how do you go about trying to – I mean, they have, as you just pointed out, they have a – lot of options and an experienced quarterback under center. How do you go about trying to slow them down and not let them, you know, get to 28, 30 points? Because you got to believe if Atlanta gets there, it's probably going to be a W.
But you know what? It boils down to it. You just got to have an attitude. And the reason why I say that is, you know, last week, you know, we played a team at MUS, in Memphis University School, and they were 4-0, and they were dominant in our conference. We're a lonely 1-2, 1-3. So we're kind of limping in. Everybody said we can't do it. They said they got weapons. They have a guy going to Alabama. But when we stepped on that doggone field, we was going to run through somebody's lips. I don't care who it is. We're going to run through their face. And that's exactly what the Tennessee Titans got to do. I know you have Sanu. I know you have Ridley. I know you have Julio Jones. I know you have Freeman. I know you have Ryan. The list goes on. But the thing about it is when you get hit in the mouth, when you get hit in the lips, you have to respond. And the thing about it is if they go with that attitude and say, you know what, I understand you guys have talent, but we got some talent too, and we're going to come in here and do the job that we're capable of doing. You done got me all hyped, man. I sound like a doggone coach.
I know. I was waiting for you to blow the whistle.
You know, it means so much, though, Chris, because I thought about that with the Eagles last night. I thought they played that way. They were
sure
1-2. They're going into Lambeau Field, but they had the attitude of, we're going to show you that we're a good team. We're going to go get this game. We're going to find a way.
I mean, you're 100% right. Look, perfect example. Everybody was talking about the Cleveland Browns. Everybody was talking about Baker Mayfield, Landry, Odell Beckham, all these guys, and everybody's like, just crowning them already. But look at how the Tennessee Titans, when they walked in that stadium, yes, on the first drive, it looked like it was about to be a blowout. But when they settled down and started hitting Baker in the mouth and hitting those receivers and getting those guys frustrated, they look like a third-grade team. It's all about an attitude. It's all about how you approach things. If I approach it, well, they got all these players and I just got, they're going to win. No, I'm coming here to run through your face. That's the kind of attitude that you got to have. Like, just like in 1999, everybody was crowning the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, to go to the Super Bowl. They were 14-2, and the only teams they lost to was us. They already packed their bags to go to the Super Bowl. They were making videos, all this stuff. You know what we did is we sat in that locker room. Eddie George stood up and said, you know what? We about to go down there and beat the brakes off us. And when Eddie George said that, we went down there, and they had absolutely no chance because we went in there with an attitude.
Like to see that attitude on Sunday for sure. Chris, yeah. I want to ask you, you played seven years in the league. Mm-hmm. This is the first year this year that you can challenge the pass interference. I want you to think back to your career. Yeah. Would there have ever been a big catch that you would have made, could have made, or you thought you were interfered with and they didn't call it, and you would have said, you know, that's a challenge flag? Because everybody's trying to figure out when they should challenge or not. How would that rule have affected you, a guy that could really get down the field and was in that position a lot, fighting for a ball down the field?
Oh, man, I'd have had 100 catches. I mean, I'd have had 100 catches.
Okay.
Not 100, maybe 150. I mean, we just got to define what is pass interference, because right now you can't even touch the receiver at the line of scrimmage. You can't really do anything. So is it grabbing the jersey? Yeah, that's a pass interference. But that you got to turn and turn when the ball's in the air, I really can't define it, because if you look at what happened yesterday and all the games around the league, you know, they're throwing the flag and trying to see, is this pass interference? See, when you have a question mark, or is it a pass interference or isn't, then that's where the gray area is, because what is the definition of pass interference? That's where the problem is.
I watched the play last night where Alshon Jeffrey,
right.
It was a very subtle thing. But he ran an out route, and it was interesting. Mm-hmm. They didn't win the challenge. He comes back and catches the next ball anyway. They go down and score, so it didn't really matter. But he made a play where he's about to catch the ball. There wasn't a lot of contact, but when you slowed it down, you saw that the defender took his left arm and just pushed it a little bit. So he couldn't get two hands on the ball, and he immediately signaled to the sideline, hey, look at that. And he sort of convinced his coaches to challenge, and they didn't win the challenge. When you slow it down, you can appreciate what he saw. It just looked subtle. It didn't look blatant.
But see, we don't know the definition of what pass interference is. And if you keep having that gray area, you know, you're going to keep having these situations. I mean, there's a guy that I used to play with named Chris Dishman. He was with the Houston Oilers / Titans. This dude would grab you, he'd grab your shoulder pads, and they never call pass interference. But today, if you accidentally grab somebody's jersey or grab their shoulder pads, is it pass interference or isn't? So when you have a gray area, nobody knows the definition of pass interference. So that's why guys are getting upset to say he grabbed me, and then the other guy said I barely touched you. So what is the definition of pass interference?
It's a huge game within the game.
It is.
Here's another thing that I think is important that Darren and I discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Falcons just lost a key defensive back for the season. And everybody saw it. He threw his helmet. It was so frustrating because he knew right away he was done. He blew out his Achilles.
Mm-hmm.
How do you try to figure out when you're game planning? Here's the matchup, right? So and so is hurt. Let's test this guy out. How much that I'm sure goes on a ton when you're prepping for a game.
It does, but the thing about a defensive coordinator is if they bring a new guy in, they're going to protect him. They're not going to put him in a situation to where he can make a whole bunch of mistakes. But you better believe, especially when we played against the Cincinnati Bengals. When they took out a defensive back, we knew our stats were going to be high because their defensive backs were terrible. So when we see a guy like that that gets hurt, and you know, it's sad that he got hurt, but what you got to do, you just got to take it and stride the next man up. We're going to go after him regardless of what it is, because, you know, the guy doesn't dictate the play. It's when the offensive coordinator calls a play to make you make a play.
Insworth tonight?
Oh, we about to go do this thing. We better go. I can't say it too loud. But, yeah, we're going to go try to do this thing. I hope they're not listening. But, yeah, we got a big game, man. I mean, Ensworth's good. They got a lot of talent. They got their skill. They got a coach, Rock. I mean, they got a good team, and it's our homecoming. So we got to go down there. They got to come to us, and we got to go make this happen.
All right. Well, good luck tonight, Chris. Good to talk to you.
Man, always.
We'll chat next Thursday or probably this weekend if you win or if I win.
would you please try to win the game, sir?
If I win, you'll know.
Okay, you'll get a call.
Thank you, Chris.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Forever Titan, okay. Chris Sanders. Good stuff.
He's talking about, like, the rivalry. Like, it's only a rivalry if both teams win some. Mm-hmm. So he needs you to win a couple to make it a real rivalry. I think that's what his message was subtly there.
That's fair. We'll come back. We'll flip to the other side. We'll get a Falcons perspective from Chris Tomino next. So we've talked to Jim Wyatt from TitansOnline.com, and you just heard Forever Titan, Chris Sanders, who anchors is a part of our pregame coverage in our Silly Underdog contest on Thursdays. Now let's get a Falcons perspective. We did have Wes Durham on yesterday, a good conversation with him. Now let's check in with Chris Tomino, who, of course, is with 680 The Fan. He was laughing. I don't know what's up, Chris.
The whole idea that you had Wes Durham on yesterday and you're going to follow up with me is just ridiculous.
Why is that ridiculous?
Well, because Wes Durham's a true professional.
Well, we don't feel that way. We feel like, you know, you're both professionals. You both, you know, you've done it. Both have done it at a high level and for a long time, and so we don't feel that way. Did we lose Chris? Hold on.
I think he's stunned at the compliments. You just floored him with that compliment.
Well, they both are pros. By the way, Chris is going to be working a little bit longer than just the regular season of baseball because he does their pre and post for the Braves. Let's check and make sure he's back on there, Max. We lost him. I don't know what happened.
You know, what's interesting is for the Braves, all of a sudden the plot has thickened. After the last few weeks, it's like, well, the Braves are going to play the Cardinals in the first round. Well, the Brewers are trying to steal the division. They're one game back.
Yep. And we...
He gone.
So I guess he's having a little phone troubles.
So he's left us in anticipation. So it will be an interesting last weekend from that perspective to see if the Brewers can overtake. Because the Braves fans, I'm sure, are saying, who's our better matchup? The Brewers, who have been on fire, but they don't have Christian Yelich. They don't have that ace pitcher that could dominate a short series.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the Cardinals do, but Jack Flaherty's a pretty good, like the way he's been pitching down the stretch. I think I would rather play the Brewers, but that's just me.
Let's see if we have Chris back. Chris, you there?
You do. And again, that would never happen to Wes Durham. Never happen to Wes Durham. I know that for a fact, and you know that.
Okay, that one you may have stumbled upon something I cannot counter with. So let's start. We'll hit a couple different things with you. We were just kind of touching on the Braves. Let's start with this Falcons team because we've kind of viewed this game all week as – let's just be perfectly honest. I know it's week four, but this is a must-win. Like, the loser of this game is – it's not impossible to dig out of that hole. Right. The Colts did it last year, but you don't want to be 1-3. It's not a good hole to be in, and somebody, whether it's the Titans or the Falcons, is going to face that after Sunday.
Well, I don't like the idea. Look, we talked about it earlier this week. Just because you can tell me Indianapolis did it doesn't mean it's a conversation I want to have after four games. There's a really big difference and telling me somebody's done it, because there's a reason you're 1-3. And I don't think the recovery thing is easily done if you're 1-3 for a reason. And with all due respect to Tennessee, Falcons lost to an Indianapolis team last year in a building that's not rocking and rolling. It's not rip-roaring up there. They're not a very good team. So at home, with all due respect to Tennessee, it's not like it's a star-laden team with a whole bunch of game changers. If the Falcons lose these two games in a row in a 7-day period, it's a really bad sign. I don't believe at 1-3. If you've played those two teams in back-to-back weeks with a sort of an urgency factor, that you're really going to do what the Indianapolis Colts did last year. I just don't even think it's possible at that point.
You feel bad for a guy like Neil. The injury last year at the beginning of the year, now the injury again. We all watched it play out on television. How big of a loss in that secondary is Neil?
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. So you guys won't believe this. We're at Dodger Stadium right now. Again, watch this. Yeah, they told us K-Day, Vince Scully, and who knew? Yes, sir. Yes. Yes, I believe so. Watch this. I swear that's what's going on.
I heard stadium tour. Dodger Stadium.
Vince Scully, that's big time.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're actually going to that's what we're doing. We're here now in Los Angeles. We're actually here for a fight. So, again, Wes Durham would not have a security guard actually tell him to roll down the window. I need to speak to him because I believe what they've done now is they've scolded us right here in Los Angeles. I've been scolded in Atlanta, New Jersey, got down in New York, and a couple other states. Now I can put California.
I think Wes would have a, on his vehicle, would have a sign that lit up that said, on air, currently. Do not bother.
By the way, that may be a card you hold. You've been scolded in many states.
Oh, many
Wes
states.
Durham has not.
Yeah. So Keanu Neal going down, because we saw it last year, not a good thing. The Atlanta Falcons don't have enough guys to make up for. You know, the next man up mentality is fine if you think the next man up is not going to be a big drop off. And, you know, I just don't want this to be a repeat of last year. Even to last year were maybe supposed to make you feel a little bit better, but I'm not sure that really happened. So it's not a good feeling going into this game. And, you know, you guys are going to see it and hear about it. It's not a huge home field advantage. It is a huge home field advantage for the Falcons because it doesn't feel like that's actually what's about to happen.
Why have they not been able to get to the quarterback this year? Only 5 sacks on the season.
It's been a number of years. It really has not been great. It really has not been great for a long time coming now, and I'm not sure why. You know, we had a guy here was back. Guys with 4 sacks instead of 4 guys with 10 sacks. Well, okay, I don't care what the math is anymore. I just need guys to hit quarterbacks is what I need. I mean, seriously, I just need somebody to start hitting the quarterback and knocking them down.
I'm sure it's been a topic a lot, Chris, this week, that the Titans have been the opposite. They have not been able to protect their quarterback in any of the 3 games, really. They got by in the first week and beat the Browns, but the last 2 weeks it's been a big issue.
Yeah, and again, it's just one of those where you go with only 3 games, small sample size. But if this far, then it's not going to be great. It's really not going to be great. And that goes back to the Indianapolis thing. Do you really want to start to tell me about a team that did it last year without that?
While we lost you for a second there, we were laying out that the Brewers have actually made a run here. It's such a not just to get to the wild card, but they actually could steal the division. What do you think the matchup is for the Braves if it's Brewers and not Cardinals?
Good question. What I hope is Milwaukee has to play a whole bunch of games, including this weekend in Colorado, and they start burning pitchers left and right. I'm really hoping they burn pitchers because, you know, at a certain point, if you're in 5 cities in 5 days, then you're not going to be in as good a shape as you can be to come here Thursday and start a playoff series. You know, look, they want to win a division. They don't want to have to having to play all the tiebreakers. Then you're just hoping that starting pitcher, all hands on deck, that thing comes into play on this 50-game stretch. And they've done it with pitching. You know, I can go look at the numbers. Some numbers that you don't believe is done is totally believable.
I'm not sure we're getting good. It's L.A.'s a big city. They should have, but maybe he's down in the bowels of Dodger Stadium.
Well, you've been to Dodger Stadium.
Yep.
The ravine, it is in an odd area there.
Oh, it's when you're going there, you're like, Are we going the right way? This is we're in a neighborhood. What?
Yeah.
There's a baseball stadium
and there's
major
hills
league baseball.
And there's, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, what are you sure we're going the right way? And then you come up on a stoplight and it says Dodger Stadium, arrow pointing to the left. Well, I guess depending on where you are.
In some areas, the stadium is totally blocked. You can barely see the top of the light pole. And you're like, well, I guess it's over there. And then it is a beautiful place once you see it.
I will say this for all baseball fans out there, I've done tours. I've done the Wrigley tour. He said he's getting ready to take the Dodgers stadium tour. If you're going to go to a city that's got a really cool stadium, take the tour. If they're out of town, go take the tour. Well, actually, they do it sometimes, I guess, during the day when they're even – if they're in town, but sign up for that. It's really cool because they take you, you know, all parts that you're never going to go see if you're just going to the game. I have found the stadium tours to be a really cool thing. I took the tour in Dallas of Jerry's World where they take you, you know, just take you everywhere, take you in Jerry's box and down underneath and the Cowboys cheerleaders locker room, you know, just places you're not going to, and it's just, and you, they take you out on the field. Pretty neat.
The thing that jumped out to me about Dodger Stadium is when you're standing there, it's been modernized, but at the same time, you can picture yourself this being 1968, you know, or 1960-something. You know, it opened in the early 60s. It still has that 60s feel to it, which is really cool. You know, it's not like the 1920s, like you would feel like Fenway and Wrigley still preserve, but that 1960s feel, that's the, so it's the only park of its kind. It's the next oldest park.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And so they've kept it up to date, but they've kept that old feel, which is awesome.
Yeah, I went there. It was an interleague game, Dodgers-Angels, this just in. Those two fan bases do not like each other. A little Southern California. Angels-Dodgers, it was pretty nasty, but it was fun. It was a great atmosphere. It was sold out after the game. It was a Friday night. Fireworks. We went down on the field and sat in the outfield to watch the fireworks. That was cool.
Well, we'll see. We were going to get into this a little bit with Chris, you know, talking Falcons, Titans, but also see if the Braves can get into the. They haven't won a playoff series, and I don't know how they've gotten back there,
right?
But it's been a while since they've won a playoff series. They're in position to do it this year, but they're still very young. If they win the first series, they likely get the Dodgers. And the Dodgers have been building towards this for years. They've been so close. Intriguing to see if the Braves have arrived in that conversation of being as good as anybody.
How about his comment of the Falcons having home field advantage or lack of?
Well,
was not exactly talking up the crowd.
Every Falcons person we've talked to has said that's an issue, right? It's a beautiful place. It's so nice. But they have not gotten to the point where when the Falcons are playing, they have a great atmosphere, a loud atmosphere, because there's so much to do. They're spread out. There's clubs. Yep. There's everything. Restaurants.
Come back, wrap up the second hour next. Willie told me during the break he is ready for You Just Made the List. And he said, I am ready to go. And I said, well, good. You can go first. I like it. I think he's going to be very spunky for You Just Made the List. As Crispy would say, bring the passion at high noon. Let's see if JJ in Old Hickory has brought the passion. JJ, what's up?
Not much, fellas. Thank you for having me on. Well, you know this is a big game. If they could go 2-2, okay, you look at the schedule, the next six games. I'm not going to put the next five, the Bills, Broncos, Chargers, Bucks, and Panthers. Those are all winnable games. I will put one loss is the Chargers. We know Mr. Luck owns the Titans. Well, Mr. Rivers, he owns the Titans, too. He'd be number two on that list. So you go 4-1. Okay, you're 6-3. November the 10th, I'm going to assume the Chiefs are undefeated. Could that not get some sizzle in this city? Could you not get 60K to show up on November the 10th? Is it okay? So there's a lot at stake. Because like I said, the next four out of the five next games are winnable. Okay, so that's why they need to win this game. Sunday. There's no exception.
JJ, okay. I think you are hitting a broad point that, and it's a little bit like, I saw a tweet from Adam Sparks, covers Vanderbilt, right? He was like, everybody looked at the schedule and said, yeah, you know what? Really good chance they could be 0-3. And he says, now today they're 0-3 and people are, you know, squabbling, panicking, calling for Derek Mason's head. It's like, wait a minute. We all thought you'd be 0-3.
Are they?
Huh?
Are they?
Well, the fringe. You know, the fringe.
Okay.
It's not realistic. Derek Mason is not getting fired now, not for being 0-3, right? The question is, what are they going to be at the end of the season now that they're starting to play teams that they match up with better? That's where their season will be defined. And same thing with the Titans. I think if you had pick a show in May, June, after the schedule came on and said, okay, 2-2 after four games, oh, by the way, Lawan won't play in the four games. You just said, all right, I'll take that, right? So they got to win this game to get to 2-2. If they do, you'll sit there and go, wow, left some stuff on the table, but 2-2, kind of thought that's where they would be. No coach would take that. The team won't take that before the games were played, but once the Lawan story hit, if I told you they'd go 2-2 on August the first or whatever, would you have taken it? Probably so.
Probably. I'd be careful, JJ, on that Bills game, though.
Well, we'll know how good the Bills are this Sunday. They're playing the Patriots. So we'll get a gauge. If they lose by less than 14, then we'll say, okay, nah, this Bills team's pretty good. The Patriots go up there and spank them, well, it's Buffalo.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, he brings up some interesting points, but it's so hard in the NFL, really, ever, to look at to count games as W's, right? It's just so hard to do that because truly there is no such thing. I mean, I guess you could say the Dolphins, but then you assume if everybody counts the Dolphins as a win, they're going 0-16. Now, maybe you feel that way. Maybe a lot of people think, yeah, they're going to go 0-16. But usually even the really bad teams that we've seen, they find a way to win a game or two. They still are professionals. They're still getting paid. But the Bills, tell you what, watching them, their defense is really good. They look pretty good. Now, as he said, we'll find out. The Patriots have owned them over the years like they've owned most teams. But at Denver, look, the Broncos have struggled, but the Broncos are home against the Jags this weekend. The Jags are the favorite. They host the Titans in a couple of weeks. It's still not a gimme. It's Denver's a tough place to win. The Chargers here, Rivers, as he said, is a good point. Rivers, as we've talked about, because it seems like they keep getting the Chargers on the schedule. He just owns them. And then the Bucs and the Panthers leading up to that Chiefs game. But I hate doing the, well, that's a W, and that's a, like, it's just last night is a prime example. Philadelphia's had all kinds of injuries. They lost guys again during the course of the game, and they go and they defeat an undefeated Packers team at Lambeau Field on Thursday night. That's the NFL for you. It's a hard – get in a survivor pool, an NFL survivor pool. By the way, most that I've been in, they do about two or three of them in a season. You know why? Because things are done usually in about 4, 5, 6 weeks tops. That's how hard it is. It's hard to predict games in the NFL. Forget the line. Just all you're doing is picking a winner or a loser. Like if I told you right now, who wins Denver-Jacksonville?
Yeah.
At Denver. Give me the winner, the surefire winner. Do you really know?
Heck no.
No. Do you truly know the winner of the Titans-Falcons?
Well, that's the beauty.
Take the line out of it. Who's going to win the game?
Well, we're going to make that call in pick six, aren't we?
You know what I mean? Like, if you felt like you're pretty strong, like, okay, I like the Titans, but you're saying, oh, I like them with the points. Okay, fine. We're taking the points out. Now, who is your strong play? You feel strong with no points with the Falcons at home?
I think if that game plays 10 times.
Isn't it still tricky?
It's a 5-5, 6-4.
Yeah, that's kind of the way. I agree.
Yeah, that is a league where there's a salary cap and parity is king. That's what makes the league compelling.
I just want to see their urgency every week.
Yeah, they could lose. But what I want to see them is play well, play desperate. Because if they can get to 2-2, they'll be on par with where we thought they would be, despite the issues.
Yep. Don't forget, MTSU is in Iowa to take on the Hawkeyes this Saturday. Early kickoff, 11 a.m., and that game can be heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and 97.5 in Murfreesboro. So keep that in mind. Iowa, MTSU, Blue Raiders there to take on a good Hawkeyes team. 11 o'clock kickoff tomorrow morning. It can be heard on 102.5 The Game and 97.5 down in Rutherford County. We'll come back, kick off the third hour with You Just Made the List. That's next.